You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
I am the only one in the room who refuses to be the only one in the room. It's mainly about listening. If I'm telling you I was uncomfortable just now during this interaction, just listen, just soak it in. And if you have a question, great. If you want to say why or what about this, but it's not about your experience in those situations. It's about mine.
Here's a story of a lovely mixed-race lady who grew up looking for spaces where she didn't always stand out, places where she might not have to be the only one in the room. When actress-musician Jasmine Savoy Brown moved from Oregon to Los Angeles to pursue her acting career, she was dismayed to find that once again, more often than not, she was the only person of color on her film or TV sets or at the industry parties where she was invited to attend. What would you do if one day you'd had enough? If you decided that you weren't going to attend even one more event where you'd be the only person of color, would you discreetly decline invitations where you'd be the only POC in the room? Or would you post your intentions on Instagram, putting the world on notice that you'd rather pass on the invite than show up and be the token other? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. So we're finally here releasing Jasmine Savoy Brown's episode. I think her episode is so in alignment with what's going on today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we recorded this right before the pandemic hit, but I feel like the message is even more relevant now.
I totally agree. Also, Jasmine reached out to me. Did I tell you this after we recorded?
Maybe.
She asked me to add a statement to something she talks about in the episode. I'm going to read it.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
It says, I have thought more about it, and I actually will not walk the red carpet if I arrive at an event and see that everyone is white.
Wow, that's powerful.
And I think it's worth noting that she sent this message to me in February. So it feels like it's foreshadowing the energy and the messaging of today.
So let's get to it. Please enjoy Jasmine Savoy Brown, the only one who refuses to be the only one in the room.
And don't forget to listen to Thursday's very special, the Now Normal episode, where we talk to Sammy and Don, our brothers.
From across the pond.
From across the pond in London, from the Family Podcast.
Yeah, we're excited for that one. Thanks, you guys.
So, Jasmine Savoy Brown.
Yes.
Have you ever been fired from any job, ever?
Multiple jobs.
Ooh.
Oh, I love it.
So what's
not
the worst
acting
one?
Jobs.
Yeah.
Day jobs. Oh, I'm a terrible employee.
You are?
Oh, yeah. When it's not my passion, I'm so lazy. Because
I'm like,
I'm not going to spend my life here, so I'm not going to become the best Starbucks barista ever because I don't
care. Did you work at Starbucks?
That lasted 3 weeks.
Oh, no.
Before I was fired. American Apparel lasted 3 weeks before I was fired. Mel's drive-in.
Yeah.
I worked a graveyard shift, the Hollywood ones. People would come in on drugs and throw up everywhere.
Ew.
And like, I wasn't nice to them.
Right.
And the customer is not always right. And so I'd get in fights with my manager. And so I was fired.
Like, give me an example of something you did to one of those drugged out, throwing up customers.
Just like ignored them.
Okay.
It was never rude. I just wouldn't help them or go out of my way to talk to them. I'm like, screw you. You're making a mess in the restaurant.
It's disgusting.
It's gross. Yeah. Or I'd bring in my sides to learn lines and the manager would be like, put that down. I'm like, it's 2:45 a.m. There's no one in here.
Right.
Why can't I be doing what I want to be doing?
Can't you take this job seriously?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. So
what was the shortest amount of time you worked somewhere before you got fired?
Through like 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks. That's pretty good.
What was your favorite job that you got fired from?
Favorite job I got fired from was another restaurant. It was a hosting gig, but I lasted like 8 months.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
In Koreatown called Beer Belly.
Mm. Oh, nice. All
it's right. A gastropub. They have gourmet comfort food, like grilled cheese with 5 cheeses and bacon and syrup.
Ooh.
Like that kind of thing. So good.
I'm so hungry already. You can't talk about
food. It's delicious. And they have great beers on tap and... That was my favorite.
So you were sad to leave
Beer Belly. I was sad. It was a little community, but the manager never liked me because I wouldn't always show up.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, because of having auditions.
Yeah.
I was always like, my career comes first.
That's the actor's life.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, never hire me unless it's for an artistic endeavor. Then I'm a great collaborator.
That's a message out to anyone who's listening. Remember this cautionary tale.
Or if your employer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I am Laura Cathcart Robbins. This is the only one in the room. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
So, do you know who connected us with today's guest?
Yes, I'm really excited. Johnny Showstopper Webster.
Johnny!
Shout out to one of the most talented talent managers out in the biz.
Yeah, I saw what you did there, hon.
Right.
And shout out to Johnny for connecting us with Jasmine. She posted a statement on Instagram that quickly caught my attention, and we were both like, we got to bring her on the show.
Right. You know, I was instantly curious what this was about.
Of course you were, as was I. So, let's hear from her. But first, I'm going to introduce you to her. Jasmine Savoy Brown, actress, singer, activist, who is best known for her role as Evie Murphy in the acclaimed HBO series The Leftovers, for her starring role in the ABC Shondaland drama For the People. You might know Jasmine from playing the historic figure Emilia Bassano on TNT's Will, or you might recognize her voice in Disney Logo's Star Wars All Wars. That's right? Star Wars All Wars?
I think All Stars.
Oh.
Star Wars All Stars.
All Stars. That's what it says.
Okay. I was like,
You're like, did I star in that too?
That
Disney Lego Star Wars All Stars. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. She most recently finished shooting her first lead role in the feature film Conductor. I want to hear about that. As well as a series regular role on the new Showtime pilot, Yellow Jackets, alongside Juliette Lewis and Christina Ricci, two of my favorites.
Yes.
So cool.
Awesome. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Welcome, Jasmine.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome. So I want to get to all the fabulous acting you've done and all that, but I want to start earlier. I want to start by asking how you identify.
Yeah, I identify as a queer, mixed-race woman today.
Yeah.
It changes every day.
Yeah.
Today I'm like, I am black, I am lesbian, The next day I'm like, I'm just a person. I don't know. So today that's how I feel.
Okay, good. And you were raised in Portland or no?
Springfield, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be the meth capital of the world.
Oh,
yeah.
It isn't any longer?
I don't think so. It like switches between here and probably like Albuquerque.
Oh, interesting.
And here as in Springfield, Albuquerque and a few other places. So actually, I don't know when the last time it was, but right. It has been.
Yeah. grew up there.
Yeah, that's where I grew up. I was born in Alameda,
mm-hmm.
but raised in Springfield with my mom, single mom. And my mom is white. My dad is black. He was not in the picture, but would like pop in and out, mostly like phone calls or very short visits type of a thing. And Springfield, just Oregon in general, is very white and pretty Hispanic. But those populations don't really intersect much aside from school.
Mm-hmm.
So school was very white, Hispanic, and then just like a couple black kids and like one Indian kid.
Did your dad live there?
No, he lives and lived in Philly.
Oh,
I know
in Philly.
When I was born, my parents met in Alameda in that area, and he was there.
Alameda's in Oregon?
Alameda, California.
Oh, Alameda.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, Alameda.
I know where
Alameda.
That is. Yeah.
And that's where I was made and born. And then I think my dad tried to come to Oregon for a minute, but just couldn't. And
he couldn't,
as
yeah.
a kid, I didn't get that, but now I do. Hard right. for me to even be back there for more than 4 days.
Yeah.
Even though I love my family and my friends. Yeah, but he was in Philly, and he's a musician, so he'd bop around. And I have 5 other half-siblings from my dad that I know of. There could be more. I always thought there was just a few, and then as I got older, it was like, oh, there's more. So
I have that same story.
It's yeah. interesting.
It is interesting, and yeah. it's great getting to know. Like, I love all my brothers now, but I didn't know about a couple of them until I was older.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks to social media, I actually am mm-hmm. getting to kind of know some of my siblings.
Yeah.
Some of them live in San Francisco. We haven't spent a lot of time together, but I think
you
that'll...
have time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like being the only mixed-race black kid growing up in Springfield?
Yeah, in Springfield. Yeah. So there were 2 other girls that were my same age that were also mixed-race, had the same exact situation, white mom, black dad, Danica and Tanisha. And then there would be like a couple kids in a couple grades, but not that many. And we kind of like... It was this weird thing of sticking together, but also not too much because just when you're a kid surrounded by, when you're different, I feel like you're trying to assimilate. You're trying to become like everyone else.
Yeah.
So we recognized like that sisterhood and that understanding, but didn't fully embrace it, if that makes sense. And it was just a thing where, like, I'm sure a lot of black kids know this, that thing where when you're learning about slavery in class, everyone turns around and looks at you.
Right.
That awkward moment.
Yes.
Just all
and
the
civil
time.
Rights.
Yeah. Civil mm-hmm. rights, MLK. Everyone just turns around and stares at you to yeah. see what you're going to say. And it's like, we're all learning about this at the same time. What do you want me to say? And it's just awkward and uncomfortable. That, and then as we got older, it was just, I heard a lot of like, oh, you're the whitest black person I've ever met, or you're... They had people just had to like say what they saw in a way, sorry, that was hurtful, but I didn't even know why.
Right.
Like, I didn't even know why it hurt me so much.
Well, in that kind of statement, someone could possibly intend to be giving you a compliment.
Yeah. And I
which it's not.
It's not.
Someone who's saying that doesn't always know that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I could, even in high school, I could recognize that the kids that were saying this didn't necessarily mean it. Like, I knew even then that, like, these are high schoolers, these are middle schoolers, just repeating what their parents have said. They haven't fully formed their brains and their perspectives yet.
Right.
They're just regurgitating. And so I feel like that young, I started that thing of, like, I'm going to take care of everyone else and, like, try to not make them feel bad for how bad they're making me feel. And I went so far as to gather a group of diverse students when I was a senior and get together with like a couple of staff and we created this whole survey that we conducted to the entire student body asking about like, have you ever felt like the other? How do you identify? Blah, 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 blah. And then collected all the data and then presented it in an assembly and tried to make it as like inclusive and educational as possible without hurting anyone. But by saying like, everyone feels othered and these things you're saying hurt, Like, I was trying to say, like, you're hurting me, but without hurting anyone else.
Yeah. And you're trying to educate them.
Yeah. Which was good, but also started that pattern of, like, comforting other people all the time, which I just don't want to do anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah, I completely
I haven't even been
that.
Doing it for that long. Like, I know I'm young.
Yeah, how old are you?
I'm 25.
Okay, yeah.
But, like, it's just old. Because
it's just old. But the comforting of people is old. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
As women, we do that. As people of color, we do that. Anytime you're the other. As a queer person, I'm just constantly trying to, like, make other people feel comfortable after they've said something shitty. And I just don't want to anymore.
No.
I still want to educate, but I'm just not going to, like,
But is it your job to do that?
Right? I don't know. Yeah. This is like a constant argument I'm having with myself and with people that I love. Is it? Is it our job? Like, as women, I don't know. I don't know. I think yes and no. I think we need allies. Like, queer people need straight allies.
Mm-hmm.
People of color need white allies. Like, white women are really what will change this country if they decide to do it and to, like, vote the right way on our behalf. It's up to them to educate each other, but how are they going to educate each other unless we educate them? I don't know.
No, it's a whole thing.
It's so complicated.
I was really happy to know that in the LGBTQIAK, the A stands for asexual, but can also stand for allies.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, hun, we're both part of the LGBTQIAK community.
Mm-hmm.
What is the K?
I was an ally kink. Before I knew it, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, kink.
Kink is, it
I
means anything with regard to sexuality that's counterculture.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
See? It just got added.
You're educating me. That's great. Well, that's awesome. I don't think I realized that the A also stands for ally.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really cool.
Because the Q can be queer or questioning as well. And the A can be asexual or ally. So I was like,
that's
yay,
awesome.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in the community.
I'm in too. I didn't even know it. I thought I was the problem.
Right? Well, we are in a way, but we're trying to not be the problem. And
yeah. Well, why do you think you're the problem?
Not me specifically, but people like me can be the problem.
Right.
If they are unwilling to educate themselves.
For sure.
Yeah.
And even with that, I feel like just with all of this stuff and with the culture we live in today, cancel culture.
Yes.
I hate it.
Yeah.
So
talk about that a little bit. What do you mean by cancel culture?
Like how someone says the wrong thing. Like it turns out that 20 years ago, someone said, a white person said the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
That's not cool. But they did it 20 years ago and they apologized and never did it again. I feel like there has to be room for grace. There's a difference between being a sexual predator and raping people and like saying something that is unacceptable but X amount of time ago was more acceptable.
Right.
I really feel like there's a difference and people deserve grace and people deserve to learn and to be forgiven, and that's how we'll all move forward as a culture, and like culture as in America or whatever. I feel bad for people who are walking on eggshells all the time. Like, I'm constantly going off, like, the white man is the problem. But also, if they're, trying to learn and educate themselves and are open and listening, let's just have some grace for each other.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
This episode is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Besos, hon.
What? Besos? What is that?
It means kisses in Spanish.
Oh, that's nice.
Ever since I started using this organic, flavored, yummy lip balm from Voyage AC, I feel like my lips are especially kissable.
Well, let me check that out. Oh, yummy. What is that, strawberry?
Very good. It's strawberry kiwi.
Oh, and kiwi too.
They also have cherry, watermelon, and blueberry.
Oh, like popsicles.
Exactly. In honor of summer. And they're so great. My favorite thing about them is that they have the staying power of other lip balms, but no waxy feeling. They also keep your lips so incredibly supple, even under my mask.
I never even thought about that. So can I use it? Is it unisex?
It has the teeniest little bit of tint, so if you don't mind that, go ahead, hon.
Oh, you know how I like it. Maybe I'll just get mine off of you then.
Mm, besos.
So, honey, how can our listeners get your incredibly supple lips?
Well, they can find these lip balms and all of Voyage AC's products on their website.
Oh, that's right. You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEETCIE.com.
And exciting news, Voyage AC's Studio City, California store is open for business.
All right, we're coming back, y'all.
Yep, they're offering contactless shopping to their customers Tuesday through Saturday.
And how does that work?
So you just go to their site, you take care of everything remotely, and when you pull up, they'll bring the goodies straight to your car.
Oh, that's nice.
Also, if you're looking for great gifts, check out the extras category on their menu pull down on their site. They have all those cozy blankets, leather tassel keychains, tote bags, and more.
And don't forget the hand sanitizer and face masks.
Of course. Thank you, hon. Please don't forget those items because we really need them now. And Voyage AC is now willing to give my friends and family discount. You know how I feel about my discount.
I know. That's so cool.
It's so personal to me. Mm-hmm. But they're willing to give it to all of our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything they buy.
That's awesome. But how do they get it?
All they have to do is enter the only one on their website when they make their purchase.
All they have to do is enter the only one? But what if they go to the store?
Then all they have to do is give them the code when they order, the only one. Then they'll get 10% off everything. Voyage AC is the ultimate luxury blend of travel, design, and scents. Each original fragrance, every candle, is created by Melanie Apple, handmade 100% natural vegetable blend, and will transport you on a journey.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
I'm going to move you on because you were not only, or actually I'm going to keep you in Oregon just for a minute.
Okay.
Because you were not only mixed race, but you identified as queer then. Is that correct or no?
No.
Okay.
So I grew up very religious, very Christian. Very fear-based mm-hmm. home. Well, I shouldn't say home. My mom was such a wonderful mom, so loving. It's just I was devout Christian, and there's just a lot of fear in that.
Yeah.
It just happened to take place at home because I lived there. Yeah, and I always was attracted to girls, but I never could admit that to myself. I definitely fell in love with a couple of my best friends in high school, but I would just kind of put it out of my head. I wouldn't even really think about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't really come out or embrace my full self in that regard until I was 21.
Oh, wow. So just recently.
Pretty recently, yeah. But I just went like balls to the wall with it. And it's just, it's my personality to spend, well, it just depends. But with things like this, I'll spend a lot of time thinking about it. And then I just have to go all the way out. Like with the reason that I'm here with that Instagram post, I was like, spent months, and we'll get into that, but just in a dark place regarding who I was surrounded by, getting depressed. And I was going to start changing my friend circles and like letting them know I'm no longer going to these events. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to post it on Instagram. Let the whole world know.
Yeah.
And so with coming out, it was similar where I was like, this is going to be painful for my family and certain people in my life. So I'm just going to shove it down their throats so we can speed up the process, because they're either going to like leave me or come to love me, and they need to figure it out quickly. So I like with my mom, I would like send her pictures of me and my girlfriend all the time and update her constantly and like put it in her face. This is a real person and you're going to love them. And now she does. And we're all really close. And same with my whole family. At first it was really hard for them. And now my partner comes home for holidays and like spends time with my family. And it's maybe not the best approach to life necessarily, because it's the best thing for me, but it might not always be the best thing for other people.
Right.
But, oh well, that's the way that I operate.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that you take so much time to process and really think it through first is good for everybody, because you're not doing it impulsively, right? It says, doesn't sound like it.
Mm-mm.
It sounds like you're really thinking it through, and then you decide that it's time.
Yeah.
And this is the time that you're going to own your truth. There could be no bad time for that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now let's move you to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you were musical. You are musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to go to school for musical theater.
Oh, okay.
It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Here's what actually happened. I auditioned for several schools. I got rejected from all of them, which is kind of insane. I'm definitely not the best singer in the world, but I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
I learned later through some friends that are in the admissions process with those schools that they're just casting a show, like when they're filling their 40 new students for the musical theater program. And I don't have like a traditional black voice. I can't like do those gospel-y belts.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't fit in the character they were casting. And that's why I didn't get into any of those schools. But it worked out, because instead I lived in Portland for a year. And then I moved to L.A. when I was 19 with $2,000 in my pocket.
Yeah.
And a dream.
And so after you got here, did you start auditioning or?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I met my manager when I was still living in Portland. Mm-hmm. So I already had her when I got here. And right away I started auditioning. I actually booked the very first thing I auditioned for, which was a two-line co-star on The Fosters.
Oh, nice.
It was Gossip Girl number two. And then it was another like 300 auditions before I booked something again.
Right.
There's this, I don't know what the word is. They say that for every 100 auditions, you actually book the job. And that's proved about right. I think I've had about like 800 auditions and I've had like 8 jobs. So,
I mean, you've actually had a lot of jobs for someone your age.
I've been
who moved here 4 years
fortunate.
Ago.
Yeah.
So you've gone on a lot of auditions.
Yeah, I've gone on quite a lot of auditions.
So let's talk about your experience in feeling like the only one here.
Yeah.
Is that like on set? Did you feel that?
You know, yes. There have been 2 sets where I didn't feel that way. That was on For the People, which was a Shonda Rhimes show, Shondaland. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this film that I just did, Conductor.
What is that about?
So it's about a girl with, or a young woman with synesthesia. Are you familiar with synesthesia?
No.
It's this thing that quite a lot of people actually have, like 5% or something, where your senses are crossed. And so you see color.
Oh, I
and
do know about that.
It's really interesting, and it's associated with different things. Whether it's someone's playing the note of C and then you see orange, or
there was someone on The Voice with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And Frank Ocean has it, which actually
makes so much sense. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I played a woman with synesthesia, but how she gets her high is from the sounds of flesh being ruined. It's a horror film. So.
No, sea color.
Hear color and sea color.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just depends on the type. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Sea color as in an aura of color when you're hearing a
yes. Yeah.
sound. Thank you. That's hilarious. So in order to get that high, I need to murder people. Mm. So that is the story. But it's actually very artistically done. Yeah, it's a movie. And the set, it was the most female set I've ever been on, where a lot of the crew were women. The most queer set I've ever been on, just a lot of queer people. And very diverse, like diverse crew. It was awesome. I didn't realize until being on that set that I'm always like kind of guarded and feeling a little bit unsafe on set. And I just felt so relaxed. It was really, really nice.
That is such a nice feeling when you realize that you can relax somewhere. Yeah. Especially, it's almost like holding your breath all the time.
It is.
And then exhaling and be like, oh, I can breathe here.
It's so nice.
Yeah.
So those were the two times, those two sets that I didn't feel like the only one.
So when you did feel like the only one, what was that experience like?
So,
sorry, I'm just thinking about like hair and makeup and all of that. I'd like to hear about that.
That's a big one.
Okay.
So I didn't, when I first moved here, I didn't really understand that that was a thing. And also when you're young, you're playing the game.
Right.
And so, yeah, I moved here when I was 19, 6 years ago. Those first few sets I went on, I just kind of was happy to be there. And I wouldn't complain or say anything, even though I looked terrible, because this woman can't do my hair. I've been fortunate with makeup. I have very light skin.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard for people to figure it out. But in recent years, I just show up to set with my own hair stuff and my own skincare. Mm-hmm. And I was on a set recently where they had asked me to bring my own products, my own makeup and some skin stuff. And I said no. Yeah. I was like, I'm sorry. We're not shooting for another 3 weeks. I gave you the numbers weeks ago of the stuff. Send it. PA to go get it. Like, I typed up this whole thing and I sent it to one of my girlfriends and she was like, do not send that, and called me on the phone and was like, you need to calm down. Because I typed like, did you ask the white girls to bring their own makeup?
Right.
Like, I went on this whole thing. She's like, that's not going to help anyone. You don't know this lady. Maybe she's really nice and she just messed up. Just give her the benefit of the doubt, respond nicely and show up in a positive place. And I was like, I don't want to. And she was right. She was really, the woman was nice, was perfectly fine. But it wasn't like the shoot started tomorrow. It was 3 weeks away. It was just pure laziness. I don't get it. So yeah, it's become a thing for sure, but I just won't tolerate it anymore.
Well, and you know, it is a thing. There's a movement where there are black women in Hollywood are no longer going to be doing their own hair.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't hear about this.
I'll have to send it to you.
Yeah.
There was like a petition being signed where it's an equity thing. And if every actress is getting hair and makeup done and the products are there for them and there are people there that are equipped to do their hair, then it has to be every actor or actress.
Amen.
Or actor, if you're just going to cover both. Because it is such an othering thing, right? Yeah.
And it's because that's the first place you go in the morning. You get your food, you put your stuff in your trailer, and then you sit in the hair and makeup trailer. And right away, it's like, welcome, you're already different.
Right.
And you already, and that's time that I need to be, let's say we're shooting an emotional scene today.
Yeah.
I need to just be like relaxing, going over my lines, mentally preparing. But if I'm having to do my hair and makeup now, that's that 90 minutes that I'm supposed to have of prep time. Gone.
Yeah.
And I just have to show up to set and be on, and everyone else didn't get that.
It creates inequity.
Yeah.
And then you don't get angry.
I'm not in a good angry mood. Yeah.
As it should.
Yeah.
What else about being on set could feel othering?
Well, so for the first few years I was here, because I grew up surrounded by white people all the time, it didn't feel weird to me. It wasn't until I started having a very diverse group of friends and started shaping my community to look a certain way here that I started noticing how uncomfortable I actually felt. And again, that feeling of holding my breath. And it's just, I feel like unsafe, not necessarily physically, but emotionally, when there's no one that looks like me around. And I was recently on a job that had promised to be very diverse. in a script.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask how it promised.
Yeah. It specifically said that. And I showed up and, well, first I just showed up for wardrobe and tests and stuff like that. And the entire wardrobe team is white. Then I go to meet the producers. All of the producers are white. Then I meet the makeup team. I'm like, okay, this is problematic because it has to start at the top. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I end up meeting the cast. Everyone's white until they add like two people later who aren't. But I just was standing there in this room about to just start crying because I was like, here we go again. I just feel like I can't fully be myself. I don't feel like emotionally safe in the sense of like, there's no one that has my back or can understand what I'm going through. I don't have the words to explain it, but it's just this feeling of like I'm alone and I'm unsafe. And what's really disheartening is seeing it come from above, like from the producers down to the people they hire, all the way down to the cast. And it was this moment for me where I was like, this is a moment in my life and I'm done and I'm going to start speaking out about it. And I actually talked to some of the people up above and told them how uncomfortable it made me and that I didn't like it. And I was like walking to the office like I'm about to get fired, but oh well. Didn't. They heard me, validated me, asked me to continue to be part of the conversation, which could be Band-Aid, but I don't believe that it is. I believe that it was a true invitation and I'm going to continue to.
Yes.
And I was just like, I have to start speaking out about this. I'm going to lose job opportunities and maybe friends, but I'm going to creating a world that I want to live in and creating space for other people. And last year I produced a short film, produced and directed, which was exciting. It's being edited right now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it was so inspiring. And I am just on a mission now to produce works, even if it's just connecting people or if it's being part of casting a project or whatever it is. We need more color and more diversity and more anyone that's the other, whether that is someone who identifies as fat or someone who identifies as kinky or is trans or whatever, someone who's in a wheelchair, whatever it is, we need to see it. I can't explain to people who've never not seen themselves on screen what it feels like. The first time I saw Wonder Woman, I was bawling seeing just
the movie yes
that came out a few years ago,
yeah,
Patty Jenkins film. These women just being strong and badass. None of them necessarily looked like me in the sense of my skin color, but it doesn't need to be that all the time,
right?
Just some aspect of me. It was so emotional and that theater was full of women just crying. Last night we were catching up on Atlanta and just seeing Zazie Beetz, I just started crying. I was like, she literally looks like me and she's just slaying it and she's so beautiful and strong. Or even someone who doesn't look like me, like the trailer for Mulan, I was bawling because I was like, look at them being so badass. They're going to inspire so many people who look like them. Like, and the argument that it doesn't sell is bullshit, because if you actually look at the facts, the number of white skinned people on this earth are like 16%. Why are we making movies for these 16%? If you make movies for everyone else, your movie will make more money. I don't get that argument.
Well, it is that. You're right. But it's the marketing. You can make beautiful movies for people of color, and you can make beautiful movies for for a population that is all white. If it's not marketed anywhere, then nobody's going to see
or
it
if it's
regardless.
Cheap marketing.
Yeah. I love what you're saying, because what I hear you saying is that you are speaking up not because you want an all black space or an all mixed race space.
No, because that's not diverse either.
You want true diversity, which is just different sections of our population represented in some kind of equality. Like there's an equal number, or at least close to equal number, of a truly like X amount of people with visible disabilities, X amount of people with invisible disabilities.
Yeah.
The LGBTQIAK community.
Yes.
Different races, creeds, religions,
anything,
nationalities, etc.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. It's a utopia.
Yeah, but I think it could actually happen.
Yeah.
I just think, I don't know, perhaps the pendulum needs to swing the other way. Perhaps we need a lot of movies that are all Black, all Japanese, all Korean, all Mexican, all whatever, in order for people to feel validated and like they've created their space, and then maybe it'll land in the middle. I don't know. But I think that it can happen. And that doesn't mean every movie has one of this, one of this, one white guy, one disabled person.
Right.
No, it's just like, let's have truly colorblind casting. Mm-hmm. Let's actually cast whoever's best for the role.
And sometimes gender blind. That's for some of my favorite roles are women who are cast in male roles.
Yes.
Who kick ass.
Yeah. And where
I
they don't
that.
Change the script to make it female.
Yes.
It's the same script.
It's the best.
You just change the name.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do.
So tell me, you alluded to this before. Tell me about the dark period that led up to you creating this post.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of my whole life. But in the last couple of years, my group of friends that I cultivated when I first moved here, everyone just kind of moved away. Quite a few people moved to New York, and I don't blame them. I would rather be in New York. Mm-hmm. Some people moved back home. Some people followed their acting school to a certain part of town. Like, it just kind of slowly disintegrated, and I didn't realize it was gone until these last 6 months of 2019. It was just back to back where I was like on jobs that were extremely all white, and I was either the only one in the room or one of two. And then my family that I grew up with in Oregon is super white, so that was Christmas. And right before that was Thanksgiving with my partner's family, who is completely white.
Right.
So, and then just some of my family came to town, and I surprised Camille and had a lot of her friends come into town that she's best friends with back home, who were always, so it was just constant, like, at home. We always have guests, and there was someone home every day, a group of people, just totally white. My family, her family, our friends, work, other job. It was just go, 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 constant, constant, constant.
Right.
And it was just like eating away at me. And I was getting depressed and like really emotionally drained. And I didn't fully understand why. And then I like had this realization in like late October. And I was like, I don't know what to do because I don't want to like punish your family or punish my family, but I don't know if I can even be around them right now. I just need to like stay home and go somewhere, do a Black church all weekend or something. Ended up not, because again, it's not my family's fault they're white, but I was just like, something has to change in the new year. It's not that I don't have any friends of color. I do. It's just a lot of them have moved. So I need to
cultivate.
Yeah, I need to add some friends to my circle. Yeah, so that's what happened. I couldn't escape it because it was work and it was home and it was the trip we had planned. It was it felt like I was just being suffocated by this cloud of white people, even though I love all of them.
No, I completely understand.
And it just really triggered me into a bad place.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's important to know is that when you are the only one, especially with race, in every situation you're in for long periods of time, it's exhausting.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is exhausting.
You have to keep the mask up.
There is a facade that needs to be maintained, just like you just said. And there is no ally to look across the room at and say,
right,
can you pick this up now, or can we just talk in the corner for a moment?
Yeah.
It's really exhausting. And another one of our guests, she and I talked about the comparison of sending your daughter to an all-male school with all-male faculty, et cetera, et cetera, and then what that environment would be like for your daughter all day, every day.
Yeah.
And it might be a great school with really great people.
Right.
But there is an extra burden coming in female.
For sure.
And being the only female in that environment and having to carry everything that's female all day, every day.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I love that analogy.
Yeah. So if you can switch that for race, it's really, I think, easier to grasp.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's not like there's any hate going on.
Right.
This is not a negative in that you're condemning anyone.
Yeah.
This is just that, oh, this is hard.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, why the podcast started, because the article that I wrote was just that acknowledgement of me being in that 600-person retreat
right.
in 2018 and being the only Black person there. It was a great retreat.
Right.
It was Elizabeth Gilbert. It was Cheryl Strayed. I love them.
Yeah.
I got so much out of it. But for 3 days of being the only Black person I saw.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Especially when there was work done. There was spiritual work. There was, like, you know, work being done on self, like self-affirming, self-actualizing.
Yeah.
To do that in kind of a vacuum.
Right.
Was really difficult. So yeah. I hear you.
And it just reminded me one more piece of this story.
Yeah.
What sparked the depression was a feeling of shame because I was out with, again, people that I love. I organized this surprise trip for my girlfriend. Her friends, we were all out to dinner and there was like 5 or 6 of them. So it was like 6 of them and me. Mm-hmm. And then I ran into a non-white friend and I saw her like look at me and look at the group I was with and like, I don't know what she was thinking, but something went across her face.
Yeah.
And I felt this intense feeling of shame. Like,
yeah.
I was just, I can't
even
explain
out?
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I gave her the biggest hug and I was like not letting go of her. And I was like, I just need to like soak you up right now. She's like, I thought it was you. But then I was like, no, that can't be Jasmine. Cause what is she doing with all
those
them?
White people? Yeah.
Yeah. And that triggered it. I felt so much shame.
Mm.
And went home that night and just it went downhill from there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't her fault. It was just me being like, yeah, I felt spotted somewhere I wasn't supposed to be or something.
Like you were caught.
Yeah.
I'm going to read your post. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So it says, "Dear friends, this year I have decided to no longer attend large social gatherings where I am the only non-white person. This happens often and has been a theme in my life. And parenthetically, I'm from Oregon. It's extremely toxic to me, to my mental health and my emotional health. Being a person of color in this industry, it's often enough that I find myself being the only person of color at work. I cannot handle that also being the case in my personal life. Please know that this won't affect individual relationships." There's an exclamation point. Individual relationships. "Nor will it affect double dates." I love that disclaimer. "But if you throw a party and invite me, I will text back, 'I'd love to attend. How many people of color have you invited?' Or something else straight to the point that may make you feel uncomfortable. Please observe and get to know that discomfort. Know that I never desire to make you feel uncomfortable. And know that your discomfort with my question is a microcosm of what I am feeling when I am the only POC, which is person of color, at your party. To POC reading this, please invite me to your parties." And there's 4 exclamation points. "I need more melanin in my life. To anyone who feels the same, my DMs are open and I love you. To anyone who is bothered by this, my DMs are open and I love you. To anyone with a question, my DMs are open and I love you." Wow.
Interesting hearing that out loud.
Yeah. I'm going to jump into some of the questions that our Facebook group
had
for you.
Yes, please.
About this.
Great. Okay.
So Jesse Marquez wants to know how you can be sure that you're the only one invited. And I think you actually said that you're going to ask if there are other people color invited, right?
Yeah, which hasn't happened yet. And I know it's going to make me feel strange.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it.
Okay. So have you haven't done this yet?
No.
You haven't?
I just... chickened out.
You chickened out
recently.
Really?
We have this group of friends that we see movies with.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had said we were gonna go and I just got scared and I was like, I don't wanna ask, let's just not go. No. I'm going to. It's just scary.
So you didn't go and not ask.
Going,
you just didn't go.
But I had the debates were on, so I was like, we're watching the debates. it's just one foot at a time.
Yeah.
We started with the post. Yeah, it's just going to be tricky because I don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. Even though I said I'm like over it, I still don't want to.
Of course.
But I'm going to do it, I promise.
All right, let's see. Well, this is interesting then. Oh, so he also wants to know, what if there's another person of color that they invited and they decline?
Right.
Will you still go?
That's so tricky. You know what? I think it'll be case by case. If it's like a work event... Yes. If it's my best white friend's party, yes. If it's someone I don't know that well, no.
Okay. And he also suggests, what about bringing a person of color as your plus one?
That's a great suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll be bringing my, my person of color who's a plus one to this. And then Lynn Alicia Henderson wants to know if you'll tell the person who invited you the reason you won't attend, if there are no other POC invited.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. And then Stacey Funk wants to know if you will leave if you're the only person of color there.
Yeah. Again, it depends on the situation. Like, if it's a work thing, I need to walk the carpet. I need to shake some hands. And then I will grab the free food. And then I will leave.
Grab the free food.
Always. I might as well get that. I put on all my makeup.
Right.
And again, if it's like my best friend's party, I will stay. But if it's someone I don't know that well, no.
Yeah. Sharon Hart says, where are you hanging out that is this white? And she follows with, I don't want to be there.
Again, it's just, you can't escape your family and where you come from. Mm-hmm. And so my roots are incredibly white.
Yeah.
And so I've just, by nature, when I first arrived in LA, just naturally gravitated toward those spaces, not even consciously. And so that's changing. Now I'm consciously going to spaces, whether it be like I'm joining No Name's book club. Are you familiar with No Name?
No.
She's a rapper / singer. She's awesome. She was featured on one of Chance the Rapper's songs. That's how I found her. She started a book club. And so she recommends certain bookstores around different cities to where you can support local businesses run by Black people. And the book club, I think it's called Reparations Book Club in LA. Anyway,
oh, it should be.
I plan to go there or to Afro House or to things like that now. But it just, I actually haven't been someone who goes out and does a lot. I work a lot and I like my home. And my home just happened to fill with white people. So I'm just trying to start going to more spaces.
Yeah.
Just as an exercise for myself of getting out of the house more, but also to consciously cultivate more friendships.
I think, what generation are you? Are you Generation Z?
I'm a millennial.
You're a millennial.
Yeah.
So I think that is really common with your generation.
Really?
Not the race thing, but
staying
home. Yeah, just because there's so much that you can do from your house.
Yeah.
So the social gatherings, meeting people that are like-minded, I think it's become more of a challenge than it was for people of my generation.
That's so true.
Because there was nothing to do at home. Everything was out.
Yeah.
So we all went out. All my friends, or most of my friends, are from when I was your age.
Yeah.
When I was like between 22 and 25. And they're still my friends. And it's because we went out and did everything together all the time.
That's such an interesting observation.
Yeah. So I think that challenge is kind of universal. Or at least, you know, in America
right
now, that people are like, how do I meet people?
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with being social. Like, when I'm out, I'll make friends anywhere I go. But it's just a matter of getting there.
But the like-minded part. And, and what you're looking
that's
for
true.
Is that commonality.
Yeah.
And that's the difficult part. It's like you show up and like, hi.
Right. Well, that here. Was a positive of this post. Some people messaged me awesome places to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a list going in my phone of just certain museums or
ooh,
certain
will you
art
share
spaces.
That?
Yeah. Let me, you can ask the next question and I'll pull it up.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's great. I was actually going to ask, Jenny Choi had some really good questions for you. This would be the last question I ask. Will you share publicly or privately call out the events that you choose not to attend because they are... for this reason, is what she says.
Yeah, I would be happy to with industry-related events, like parties that I'm invited to and things like that. I have no problem going on Twitter or Instagram and calling them out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I would have a harder time doing that with personal relationships, especially with friends if I know they're trying. I got a number of messages from white friends of mine responding to this post saying, thank you for posting this. That's something I've never had to think about. I'm so sorry that often when you have come over to my house for game night or whatever, you are the only person of color. That's just never crossed my mind. I will work to change that. I don't know how to make more friends, but I'll try. And so, like, in that case, I wouldn't want to call them out because I know they didn't. I know they're trying. And it just feels different when it's personal or professional. But trust me, I have no problem calling out this industry.
There's a really funny Seinfeld episode where George is trying to prove that he has black friends and he doesn't have any. So he like calls up his old exterminator, takes him out to dinner.
Oh my God.
He shows up at the house of this couple that rented a video once at the same store.
Oh my God.
And he like tries to like get up to their apartment and they're like, what do you want?
That's hilarious.
It's really funny.
I love that.
But so yeah, maybe your friends can watch that so they can get some tips.
Figure out how to
find friends. Some more black friends. Or just friends of color, because you're not saying I need more black people
no.
in the space.
And
just people of color.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
There's this party I am invited to every year, and it's like called the LA something about award season diversity party. This party is not diverse. It's just a room full of black and white people.
Mm.
It should be called the black and white party. You know what I mean? That's great. I love that that's a party, but don't call it diverse.
Yeah.
That's the only two things going on. That is not diversity.
But so many people have that misnomer for diversity. They think it means black people, too.
No.
And it doesn't.
It doesn't. It can mean black people also,
mm-hmm.
as well as a bunch of other things.
Yes.
But as long as I feel like the room is not diverse if there's only two types of people in the room.
I agree.
Whether that's woman and man, black and white, queer and not queer, that's great. But it's not diversity.
I just want to just tell you that my comfort zone absolutely lies in a truly diverse room. And I've been thinking about this a lot, especially since I wrote that article, to think about whether I would have been really comfortable if there had been 600 black people instead of 600 white
people. See, I wouldn't have either.
And I wouldn't have been comfortable.
Mm-mm.
My true comfort lies in true diversity. And it is how I grew up. Both my parents are black, but they were hippies. And it was, you know, it was all love, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what color anybody was or where they came from or what religious background or whatever. It was just like everyone was invited to the party, as it were.
I love that.
And, you know, my ex-husband, I have two sons. One of them's almost your age, but they're biracial, you know, mixed race, black and white. And then hun over here. He's waving. But that's truly my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I feel myself getting shallow breathing when it's less than that,
mm-hmm.
when it's less than a mixture. I become more conscious of myself, and not in a good way.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Afro House, which
okay.
I haven't been to yet, but I'm really excited to go there.
These are places to go where you Los Angeles, where you can find people of color.
People of color,
specifically black.
Yeah, but when I was on the Afro House Instagram, there were Asian people there.
Good. Okay, so people of color.
Yeah.
Good.
So then someone recommended the Underground Museum
mm-hmm.
and the California African American Museum. She said
people
there are really friendly, and it's a very black space, and you can just show up and make friends that way. So those are the places that are at the top
of my
list.
And they give a lot of mixers, too.
Oh, great.
The California African American Museum.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited to go.
Yeah.
And I have one of my good friends, Andy Allo. She, we're the same type casting wise. She got the fro. We're the same height. She's a wonderful actor, musician, writer. She's probably most famous for her singing. She and I were plus ones a lot together, and we go to a lot of stuff. And so she's going to be my buddy, my wingman for making friends.
So will you continue to document your journey with this
for
people to see?
Yeah.
Good. Where can they follow you on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Jasmine, Jasmin.
No E.
No E.
Mm-hmm.
Jasmine Savoy. Savoy like the theater, S-A-V-O-Y.
Not Savory.
Not Savory. Not Jasmine Savory. Jasmine Savoy. And that's also my handle on Twitter. On the
You're probably not on Facebook being
I have a Facebook, and it's Jasmine Savoy Brown. It's my fan page. I don't check it as much.
Okay.
But I always respond on Twitter, and I respond to DMs on Instagram like once a month.
Okay. Really good to have you.
This has been
Thank you
awesome.
For coming on and
Thank
sharing
you
your
for
truth.
For having me.
And speaking out on this issue, which I believe is so important, especially for someone your age, to be so aware of what this feels like and to be able to articulate it so well.
Thank
I you. Am really glad that you came on and did it on this show. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and stay tuned for our bonus after show, Scott Talks, coming up next.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.